All right, welcome back. Hills and twos. Pretty infrequently these days when I do it. I feel very, very JV when everyone's got like these set dates they come out, or like the On Guys podcast and stuff that people wait for. And I drop one once every 6 months, and then I'll do three for a week, and then I won't do one for a year and a half, and is what it is. But things have been a little hectic, so it's kind of the way it goes. But psyched to get it back going. Psyched to have you on, Trav. This is awesome. I think you're one of our more accomplished and esteemed guests. Kind of in that context, a little bit less of a joke podcast and more of someone that people want to learn from or should want to learn from. So I guess
I appreciate it.
just to give you a bit of an introduction, you're three times Team USA. Am I correct there? Four Olympic trials,
Four Olympic
which
trials,
is
yep.
the kind of longevity that we can only pray for in this sport. It's crazy.
Yeah.
New Jersey legend, member of the Temple Hall of Fame, right? And I'm going out on a limb, and I'm going to assume maybe at least in the modern era of track, you might be the only, Temple professional runner, but I could be wrong there.
There was a really good girl, Spanish girl, that came in after me, I believe. I don't know if she ran, like, I think she ran post-collegiately for a bit, but not positive on that.
Gotcha. It's always a big thing with like all these CBA alumni is we try to go through and see who's got the alumni records.
Okay.
So we're getting there. We only got one now. We're trying to get the mile one, but got to run a mile to do that,
What's the CBA alum mile record?
Whatever Tim Gorman ran to make the US final. I don't know what it is, but
In
he
the
made the
1500?
15, yeah, the 15 final. I know he broke four. I think he ran around 357 maybe. Back when that was like what 352 is now.
Yeah, probably. I'll go with that as well, since my PR is from back in that era as well.
Yeah, I can't wait to tell my kids someday, like, no, I actually used to be fast. I know it doesn't look like it now, but I used to be fast. Or even like the new college recruits we'll train with. They'll be like, what'd you run in high school? I'll be like 410, but that's not what that means now,
Brother, I didn't break 420. I ran 422 for 1600 meters and 916. And I don't even know if that'd get me recruited anymore.
That's what I was saying. I was like, I would have, had to go to a low level D1 school and maybe try to go in the transfer portal or something like that, with times that, were national caliber at the time, not that long ago. It's kind of crazy.
No, if you were, I mean, when you ran 410, that was a big deal.
Yeah, it was like, oh
Yeah, I
my God,
remember.
I was like, I'm gonna break four, not realizing how hard that was, running my mouth
Immediately
about
jump.
that. But I guess to give you a little further introduction to those who don't know. Could you maybe list some of your PBs for everyone, and then kind of also talking about how you were a steeple focused athlete. I remember finding the Urban Steepler Instagram account when I was like 15, getting into the sport, and I was like, that's one of the coolest usernames I could see.
I'm still hanging on to it. But that goes back to my Temple days. We didn't have a steeple pit. Didn't have barriers, nothing like that to practice on. And there's like a video out there, an old YouTube video of me running around like Philadelphia and just jumping over stuff like that. And that's truly what I did. Which is also like makes you think, it's like, oh, why are all these kids running so fast? And like that's what I did in college versus like what kids are doing nowadays. PBs across the board, ran 357 in the mile, 741 for 3K, 1319 for 5, and 819 for the steeple. But the steeple has always been my primary focus. The mile, 3K, 5K, all set at BU, so which suited me really well indoors before transitioning to the steeple outdoors. And then I had great longevity in the sport. It's probably been like my biggest talent, I guess you can call it. And I ran my first USA champs in 2011, and my last one was last year at the 2024 trials, where I ran both the steeple and the 5K.
So, not to make you feel old, but your first US championships, I was 10 years old,
There you
and
go.
or your first trials, I was 10 years old, and your last trials, I was 23 years old. So, just goes to show, the longevity in a sport where that's one of the harder things to come by. I think that's probably a lot harder than running faster times, so to speak, is to be able to stay at such a high level for so long. And it's, whether that's talent based or work based or even just the little things, it kind of goes to show what you can do in from a longevity perspective in the sport.
Yeah, definitely. You know, I think at first, like, as anyone always puts like these big lofty goals, it's like once you get to professional scene, it's like, I want to make a team. I want to make an Olympic team and I want to make a world team. And, I think after probably my third trials, I kind of shifted the focus a little bit this last stretch. I was working. I was still fully invested in my own training, but it wasn't necessarily as much of a priority. Or at least like I had something to fall back on, and I really shifted to just like, what did I want out of it? And I think having that viewpoint like really was something different that I took into the last couple of years of my career, which were some of my best years. I PR'd in the 5K, ran my best steeplechase, my PB in 2022. I ran my second fastest last year, so I had a lot of success later in my career. And then I really like, when I run into people. And they're like, holy shit, you're in like 2011, like you're saying. They're like, I was 10 or I was 9. And it's funny the overlap I had, because as you know, like I started coaching at the high school level in 2015, went back to my old high school in 2016. And I remember you were like maybe like a sophomore when I started coaching. And and now look at you,
2016.
you're running at trials last year and stuff. So not only of kids that I've come across in my coaching career are not only like running in college, maybe running professionally, but there's some that are even coaching now, which is crazy. I guess the spectrum of athletes that I have like crossed paths with from 2011 to now.
Even like, do you know Kyle Livermore? I imagine the Jersey World, and then so he was one of my assistant coaches during my time at Georgetown, and it's funny to look back. Like, you probably competed against him, or he looked up to you in some capacity, and now he's gone through his own running career and is now the head distance coach at Mizzou, and it's kind of funny how that life cycle works in the sport where you have some pros that come in and I don't want to say one and done, so to speak, but maybe a cycle and done. Or, you have guys like you that, when I started really following elite running when I was about 15 or 16, I was like, oh, this guy Travis, he's been around for a while. He knows his stuff. And then, 10 years later, you're still doing it at an even higher level, And it's really cool to see, guys that stick with it. Because I think, I mean, better than anyone, and I know on a smaller scale, how, for lack of a better term, how brutal the sport can be, on the body, obviously, but even more so on the mind, and kind of in those ebbs and flows, and the ability to stay committed and to keep chasing whatever those goals are personally, I think is something that you can't really teach anyone. It's just something that you're kind of born with to make it go. I think a lot of people hang up the spikes a lot earlier than they should. And there's a lot of factors involved, obviously, financially and even just mental well-being and things like that. But even going back to that season you had, that last season you had at BU, watching you run that 3K when I was there, I remember looking up when there was that pack of guys running. They were rolling, like they were running real fast with you guys, and seeing you make a move to cover and stay with them. I remember I looked at my coach Bonzi and I was like, Jesus Christ, Travis is still here. Like, this is nuts right now. Like, it goes to show, just that level of commitment and grit, so to speak, to be able to keep doing things at that level. And it's inspiring to me, to Nick Medeiros, someone really well, like guys like that. We talk about people like you, and we talk about how, just like I said, how inspiring it is to keep it going. It motivates us to want to do the same. So it's, I think, on behalf of everyone, especially in the New Jersey running world, we owe you a big thank you for kind of showing us what some kids from Jersey can get done when they put their mind to it,
Yeah, I appreciate it. I think so much, as like going through cycles of the sport. You ran in high school, you ran in college, now you're running professionally. Keeping the iron sharp is tough, and I think where you draw your motivation from. And I think that fuel, like for me, I think because I got into coaching, I think that fuel source changed. Like when I first, you're in college, you're on a team, it's really easy. Everything's set up for you. You're kind of rocking and rolling. And then when you get out of college, it's like, all right, well, what's really driving me to do this? And like, yeah, if you have like some ambitious goals or some like personal things, like you can really get after it for a couple of years. But what I realized like was when I went back to coaching, just like being in the community, like being around, being coaching athletes, being around guys like you, It just kept me in it longer. It was really motivating to still be there, still be present, and just having like a really good support system, not just like my family, my friends, but also like the running community that I had kind of intertwined with. I know, like I didn't coach you, but I've seen you racing for past 10 years,
And I think kind of, compounding on that, like, and I've talked about it before on this and with people, I think we probably even talked about it, just how brutal the running community can be at times. And maybe we'll get into that a bit more later, but at the same time, like that support system, first and foremost, your family and your friends, but also that community that you build around yourself through, meeting people, like even our relationship, like, we become friends through this, like, no matter the age difference or anything like that, because we have the same ambitions, the same goals. And like, you're someone I looked up to or still look up to, or Robbie Andrews, for that example, that I've been fortunate enough to become very close with and part of that tight-knit community of people that really understand what we're trying to do and understand how hard it is and how hard it can be. And I think it counteracts really well with, those, I don't want to say trolls for lack of a better term, but all the I don't even want to say haters. I don't even want to give them that respect. But those people that on the bad side of the running community that kind of bring that sort of negativity, it's always so cool to see the positive sides of things. And when you're out at the Olympic trials and everyone's hanging out afterwards, just how happy everyone is to be around each other and mingle with each other and just kind of talk shop or not talk running for once. It's really cool to see where this community has grown into, in recent years. And I'm sure it was, in the past before I was heavily involved, but it's, I think it's vital to succeed in the sport, to have those people around you that believe in you no matter how things are going. So I think that's, such a big piece of the sport that people overlook sometimes.
Yeah, and I think sometimes too, and even just with coaching and dealing with athletes, we think it's way bigger than it is, and I think that like pressure sometimes is too much. And it's like, it's like just do what you want to do, enjoy what you're doing, and that's gonna lead to a lot of success. Like the ha happiness, if you're happy, you're gonna run well. And I think we like have this false sense that we're like the main character in way too many people's lives, and like that our eyes are on us. And it's like, no, just do what you love. Like there's so many times, like early in my career, I'm like, oh man, like I'm not making that much money. Maybe I should go get a job and this and this and this. And then I realized it's just like nobody's like looking at me like, oh, Trav's still running or whatever. And if they are, like, who gives a shit? They're probably not that important to me anyways. And then on the flip side, it's like you're talking about like, oh, like maybe haters or doubters. A great example of why like you should just be doing this for yourself is and realize that you'll never make necessarily like other people happy if that's your goal or like achieving something crazy in the sport. If you just look at someone like Matt Centro and like Cole Hawker, both gold medalists in the 1500, and they're still not good enough to like people online. It's like, oh, he's a one hit wonder, he only won this. And or Centro, it's like, oh, he's a great tactician, but he hasn't run fast. Like there's never enough to satisfy other people. So you should be focusing on like satisfying yourself.
Yeah, and we were even talking about that the other day when we were warming up, like those two examples specifically. And I think that's, a big thing that I struggled with definitely early on. I think I can safely say I was the most hated New Jersey high school runner during my 4 years running in New Jersey high school. And I think a big piece of that was because I played into it, because I looked around and I'd see the things online and the Instagram hate pages and the dudes on Let's Run saying that CBA guys will never pan out. And even to this day, people that I'm not going to say names that that on
Fair. I mean,
Instagram,
you ran for CBA,
I ran for CBA. I
it's like
ran off of pure anger. Like that's all it ever was. I'd finish races and just scream out of anger, out of like, screw these guys. But long story short, and I'll find a graceful way to try to cut this all together when in
and
editing.
transition together.
But I think, and as you related to, the most unhappy times people have in this sport is when they buy into those things, because those things are always going to be there. Like we've said, there's always going to be people that are just, for lack of a better term, talking shit. And a big piece for me, and I don't know if you can expand on this, is just when you start realizing that, like it's for yourself and it's for the people that really care about you, that's when you start to find joy in the little things. You know, that's when you find joy in waking up at 5 a.m. so you can go do a 6 a.m. threshold session that no one wants to do. No one ever wants to wake up and do that. But those are the top moments that you find joy because you're working for something, you know, that's yourself, but also a little bit bigger than yourself. You know, your loved ones and the support community that you've grown around you. You know, and I think that's something that I imagine you've found a lot of success in, you know, given your general success and your longevity. But I don't know if you've had any experience with that.
I mean, I think so much of it you need to be focusing on yourself. Like when you see a lot of these high school kids or pros, like whether it's the training, whether it's the race selection, there's so many options and there's so many paths to be successful. And you really need to buy into yourself and what you're doing, and the path that you're on, because it's different for everybody. And you know, I think everyone gets caught up sometimes of just like looking out too much, you know, to these external things that don't matter. Like obviously the external things of like your family, your support, your coach, teammates, things like that, fantastic. But a lot of times I think everyone probably at one point finds themselves looking to like an external point of view and almost creating some false realities that aren't true, right? It's like, yeah, there might be people like that, you know, like you're saying when you're in high school, like talking shit, but I bet you started creating some like false realities that weren't real, like that, like everybody hated you or like it was bigger than it was. So I think a lot of times you have to just ignore that external negativity, or because half of it's probably going to be created or exaggerated in your own mind. And just focus on like yourself, your own path, what you're doing, getting the most out of like the talent and the gifts that you were given in the situation that you were given, and be happy. And then that starts to snowball and you'll have a lot of success. I think nobody will probably leave this sport like completely satisfied. They probably always want more. It's just the nature of us as runners and the nature of our sport. So yeah, just like have fun with it, enjoy it. Do it for yourself, do it for the people that supported you your whole life, and you'll be good.
Yeah, and even, you know, just real quick, like having some conversations with, you know, some family members, some coaches coming off of a year where I didn't have a bad year. You know, I think my best time was like my fourth fastest ever, but I didn't, you know, kind of expand on you know, my success of last year and being third or fourth man out of USA's and stuff like that. You're obviously very frustrated. And you know, I think the best piece of advice that I got during that was that like no one cares. You know, like I care, but no one cares to the level that you think they care, you know, like,
Correct.
and
Yeah,
like you said,
absolutely.
the those false narratives, like you even saw him, the Michael Jordan Last Dance documentary. He used to make things up in his head, you know, to motivate himself. And that's good in a way, but at the same time, it can also start to kind of eat you alive, you know, but kind of moving away from that. You know, now you're in the space where I would say you've become, you know, one of the foremost kind of coaching voices in terms of the sport for the high school level all the way up to the collegiate level. You know, I know plenty of successful collegiate and high school runners that, you know, check in on your stuff, on your videos and your philosophies, and kind of compare them to their own in order to tweak and stuff like that. So how has that been for you, kind of transitioning from full-time professional runner to, you know, the space that you're in now?
Yeah, it's been great. You know, I think I look back at why I got into coaching in the first place. You know, I was a pretty immature kid, freshman till senior year, both like mentally and physically. I was a late bloomer, but I just had some like really good coaches that had such like huge impact on me. And I was very fortunate to have a lot of like effect from like Gags. So Gags was my coach at NJNY, but he also coached one of my high school coaches. So I kind of had that influence even in high school, which it was like separate maybe from just the training itself and more about like the mind. You know, I remember how powerful that could be early on. I learned a lot of lessons from that from my high school coach. And now, you know, I coached at high school for a long time. I was fortunate to, you know, run under Coach Gags. You know, I ran under Tom Nohilly, John Troutman, you know, ran under Ben Thomas for a little bit. So I just had like a lot of experience under a lot of coaches for a long period of time, and also cross paths with a lot of like really good athletes, and then also try to put that into practice as a high school coach for the last 10 years. So I'm not a high school coach anymore. I'm working full time. So this was like a path to still coach, but then also I was like, you know what? I actually really enjoy putting out this content. It feels like it's resonating a lot with runners of all levels. I get DMs from parents. I get DMs from like other pros, former pros. And just like the lessons that I've learned. And I think a lot of the lessons that I've learned is maybe why I had such longevity in the sport. I feel like I did get a lot out of the talent that I was given. So yeah, just anytime essentially now, I pumped out a lot of stuff in terms of training, but also a lot of stuff on the mind. And now, like when I go out on runs, workouts, or whether I'm dealing with something with a kid I'm coaching, if there's like a friction point, it's like, all right, well, let me make a video about this. Maybe make a topic so that this can help other athletes, coaches, deal with things. So yeah, it's been great. I've had a lot of good positive responses to it. I'm trying not to be too clickbaity online, as a lot of run influencers are, and just give good sound advice, both from the training side of things, but also from like the mental side of things.
And I will say, as a fan of the sport, it's been incredibly refreshing to see, I don't want to call you a running influencer, but see someone with an online presence, giving advice to people, and especially, the young demographic that listens to pretty much anything that anyone says. And it not be this clickbaity, cringy influencer, kind of content, but even more so, actually be right and science-based. And experience based, because too frequently I feel like I go on Instagram and it's someone that's has run a 5-hour marathon and is like, this is what you're doing wrong with your training. Read the caption and it's 10 pages and it's this, and they're all wrong. Like every single thing is wrong. Anytime I meet someone that's getting ready for a marathon or something and they're like, yeah, I'm doing this, I'm like, I don't want to be the guy to tell you, but like, I just stop listening to these guys, and I actually show people your account all the time. Like, this guy knows his stuff. Like, listen to him. Don't listen to the guy that started running a year ago.
It's so hard for me not to just comment on so many of these
I
people's
do it all the
posts.
time,
It's
and I wake up.
insane. I'm like, it's like a guy started running last year and he's like, no, don't fuel on any of your long runs for a marathon, or like, do this speed workout, 8x800 at marathon pace. Like, brother, that is not a speed workout. I even thought about like just making just like a secondary account where I just have people
Just
send
troll
me
people.
poor run influencer advice, and I'll just like talk over it and explain why this is wrong and what they need to be doing. But I'm like,
That's
I
a
don't want to spread
great
negativity.
idea.
I'm trying to be a positive influence.
It's so bad. I have a bit of insomnia, I would say. Real tough time falling asleep at nights, and you end up just going through your phone and stuff like that. And so many times I'll just drop comments and just be like, why is anyone listening to you? And then I'll wake up in the morning and I'm like, probably delete that. It's just, that's not good. I probably shouldn't do that. Like, it's not a good look for me as someone that's still in the sport, but it is very, very frustrating, to see from that perspective. But like I said, it's very refreshing and a great learning experience to see. Like, I've learned myself from a lot of the things that you've posted and talked about, which is, been great. But, kind of transitioning forward, and I think this is a little bit of a taboo subject, and I'll be careful about what I say, and I assume you will too. But I was reading through some of the comments on one of your recent videos talking about high schoolers getting a lot faster these days, and someone asked you about, do you think high schoolers are doping and things like that? And this is something that you and I have talked about, recently. But I will say, and I don't know if you can vouch for this or not, obviously, the professional level, doping to some extent is incredibly prevalent. And like we've discussed before, it doesn't necessarily mean it's Lance Armstrong doctor-focused doping, but it's crossing the line well beyond anyone should, and at least from my collegiate experience, and this might get me in trouble, I think the prevalence of doping to some extent in college is exponentially larger than anyone thinks it is. And I was curious what, your thoughts on that kind of whole subject are, from the professional level down to the high school level. Because I think at the high school level, if anyone is, it's the parents' fault. There's no 17-year-old boy going out there buying, like going to a pharmacist trying to get these substances or black market. But in college, it's a hell of a lot easier, to do so. I've got a lot of evidence on my phone of specific people at specific high level schools, and it's their friends telling me, like, this kid's taking Viagra before a race to boost his testosterone and stuff like that, and telling me what school he goes to. And I'm like, buddy, it's so easy for me to go on the roster and see that this kid went to high school with you, and I can find out who that kid is real easy, you know? And it's little things like that where you see kids pushing limits. But I was curious kind of what your thoughts are, you know, on that subject from the high school to the pro level, being someone that undoubtedly has raced against, you know, juicers, so to speak, you know, people on stuff.
I think let's start at the high school level. Let's start at the high school level because I think we'll start there and work up. I couldn't
Ease
believe
our
how many
way
people
in.
commented, and it was almost always, I think I probably got like six or seven comments that said like, "Oh, the high school kids are doping." And I think only one of them was a high school kid, and the rest were like dads. And I'm
Yeah,
like, "Damn,
it's dads
like
unhappy that
crazy, crazy
their
that these
kid's not
adults
as
are accusing
good.
that."
Yeah. It's brutal.
It's like, no, your kid's not running 205, and this kid's running 146 because he's doping, and your son's
Yeah.
not. Yeah, so high school level, I don't think it's any different than what it was, say, 10, 15, 20 years ago. If there was a small portion doping then, there's a small portion doping now. And the reason I don't think that is, who would be involved, and money needs to be involved. And like, oh, NIL deals are fantastic, but at a high school level, for a majority of people, it's not life-changing money. And I don't think parents are going to get on board, and a high school coach getting paid $4,000 a season is going to get on board with a kid going through an actual like doping regimen, or like going down and abusing pharmaceuticals. If so I don't think it's doping at the high school level. I really think kids are just training at like kids are training now, probably more elite than what I was in college, now at the high school level. So I think that's the big thing. And then when you go to the college level, now there's more money in collegiate sports. So I think maybe what was formerly what professionals in terms of the doping are maybe now at the college, because it's just as lucrative now. You can get NIL deals, and you get these big contracts that are of big value. So, and then at the post-collegiate level, I don't think the game has changed from a post-collegiate level over the past decade or 2 decades. I think we saw it with like the Salazar and the Dr. Brown situation. I think in the US, I still think maybe the pharmaceutical system is being kind of abused, to be honest. Like whether
Absolutely.
that's prescription medication, whether that's thyroid medication, TUEs, things like that. So, and again, but the thing is, that's not illegal. We can sit here and debate whether that's ethical or not, but it's not illegal. So, so that's kind of my take on it. But at the same time, if we kind of reflect back to things I was talking about before, that's something that we can't control. Like, I can't control if other people are on TUEs or taking thyroid medication. That's not something that I would want to do to myself. So, and I can't control what other people do. And also, again, it's like, what could I do anyways? It's kind of like a legal loophole a bit. So, you just got to focus on yourself. So, at some points I was like, yeah, that became a big thing, especially around when like that whole Salazar thing came out. It was like, all right, well, who's seeing Dr. Brown? Who's doing this stuff? But then when you're worrying about other people, it's just gonna affect you negatively anyways. But I
And
can
even
say I've
like,
never had a prescription medication or a TUE or thyroid medication in my career.
there we
But
are. We're even on that boat.
maybe that's why. But yeah, I landed on that boat.
Yeah,
I
maybe
wasn't
that's
good
why
enough.
I'm not at USA's right now. You know, maybe I do need a good doctor.
Maybe that's why I didn't make an Olympic team, and I just was really good for 10 years instead of really good for four.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and you didn't, you know, change coaches because of bad blood six times or things like that, you know? Sorry, that sounded way too close, like I was accusing a certain person, and I'm not. I want that on the record. I am not. But you know, I will say, like, having been around the elite side of the sport for a while and you know, kind of directing this towards the younger runners or the casuals, like, and I'm sure you can agree, like, when you're at the professional level, it is so obvious who is on stuff and who is not. And I don't say that from a perspective of times or time jumps or things like that. There's just even people's bodies you can look at and their physical changes and things like that, you know, and I think everyone knows who's on stuff and who's not on stuff. You know, people speculate, and that's one thing, and I hate that. Is the speculation just leads to just really bad stuff all around, you know? But you know, there are things. It's like When it looks like a duck and walks like a duck and quacks like a duck, it's probably a duck, you know? But like you said, there's nothing
Yeah,
we can really
no,
do about
yeah,
it
you're not
other
wrong. I
than.
think I would say, oh, I agree with you on a certain extent, and but I think probably more so in my later couple years, I think I've gotten a little soft where I think some there are more honest people out there. So,
Absolutely.
you know, I
Yeah.
don't think like it's easy to shed a lot of negative light and then like kind of paint that brush and think like, oh man, oh he's better than me, so he's taking X, Y, and
Has
Z.
to, you know? Yeah.
I do think a lot of people are doing it in the right way and are still succeeding. So yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, I don't want to stay too long on this subject. It's I don't want to get myself in trouble with some people here, but I tend to have a habit of doing that. Couple last questions for you because I know you got to get out of here. But can you speak a little bit to the professional contract process and kind of how much of a bloodbath that can be, especially someone that's continuing their career and moving between deals or being unsponsored and things like that. We see a lot with the Bandit running unsponsored project now. You've people like Ajay who deserve a deal until the rest of their lives because of the success they've had in the sport. But it's just, kind of how mean the sport can be sometimes. But can you speak a little bit to that just in terms of support and things like that and how that process works?
Yeah, speaking of contracts, I didn't get my first contract until like after my first Olympic cycle, pretty much. Mine was very bare bones. I would say if you are looking to run professionally, or you have the opportunity to be searching around for contracts, a lot of times the newer brands or the brands that are deciding to pump more money into the sport in that moment, it's about like striking when the iron's hot. Like if you can get in and get a contract when like Hoka was first coming on board and getting in money into the sport, like you know, which I kind of overlap with, they were giving out really lucrative deals and really good terms and no reductions and things like that. But I think it's shifted a bit now too. You, in terms of like the influence you have, the, you know, the followers you have, like that was not as big as just, hey, what are you running? And things like that. So yeah, it's really challenging. I think people don't understand how challenging and difficult it could be once you leave college or run professionally. Not only are you on your own with a lot of things, but even if you get a contract, you know, a lot of these contracts, unless you're a really big name, are short duration. So like they might be a year contract, and that contract might expire on, you know, USA is usually the last week of June, second to last week of June. And for a while there, I was on a 1 year contract, and my contract would expire July 1st, and USA's would be the week prior. And either I was making the final, placing X, running X, or I was not getting paid the next year. You know, so it could be challenging. I think it's gotten to a lot better of a place than when I first came out and when I was getting a contract. There's a lot of money in the sport. I think for a few reasons, I think a lot more athletes, a lot more eyes on social media has played a huge game with it. And I also think all these shoe companies now selling these really high ticket items like the carbon plated shoes, right? You're selling $250, $300 shoes. Your margins on that's probably fantastic. They have more money, more of the everyday person is buying those type of shoes. They have money to spend, so I think it's in a much better place. But it could be really tough. It could be really challenging. All the major brands still probably have contract reductions in there, unless you're taking a lower deal. I'll use an example of Don Cabral. So Don Cabral, two-time Olympian in steeplechase, he was the American collegiate record holder in college. And that year, that was an Olympic year, is our senior year, me and his senior year of college. And won NCAAs, broke the American collegiate record, was at trials. He signed his contract between rounds. So you have the first round of the steeplechase, and you usually have a day to 3 days off, and then you have the second round of the steeplechase at Olympic trials. He ran, negotiated a contract. He signed a contract that was betting on himself. He was offered like, hey, here's a $50,000 contract. It does not matter if you make or do not make the Olympic team. Here's a $100,000 contract, but if you don't make the team, you're making 25. And he really like kind of bet on himself in that scenario. So it could be really challenging. It could be really tough. I would say something that people, if you are in the space, is like definitely like shop around. Definitely push the, I would say most agents in the sport want to maintain their relationship with the shoe brand and the marketing director from that shoe brand. than they are worried about delivering you the best possible contract. So I've loved to see like people like Parker Valby, where they're just using, I think her dad's a lawyer. Yeah, he doesn't give two shits if like, New Balance doesn't like him in a couple of years, because he's not reliant on getting more contracts from that shoe brand for future athletes. So that's really tough, and it's a really tough battle, because a lot of times too, these agencies and agents will bring to the table multiple athletes, and a lot of times someone's getting the short end of the stick. It's like, all right, I can bring you in this other athlete for a little bit cheaper if you do this for this athlete. So
And
you got to
I've
be
seen that a
careful who you
lot.
select.
Yeah, I've seen that a lot with a lot of my, friends that have been signing deals the past couple of years and stuff, like how much the relationships that agents have with certain brands, even if an athlete has no interest in going to one of those brands, they still kind of have to entertain it in order to maintain that relationship with their own agent, and so the agent can maintain those relationships. And even like you were saying, it's I don't think until I got older that I really understood like the reduction aspect of the sport. And even all these new Nike contracts, you see everyone left and right going to Nike now in these new groups. Like if the casual could see what the reductions in the Nike contract look like, you'd be like, wow, like that's not great, but it's just the way the game is now. And like you said, but Don, it's about kind of betting on yourself. And when you bet on yourself, you see someone like Abdi Nur have a ton of success because, financially on top of his running, because he bet on himself, but that doesn't always work out that way for other athletes and leaves them in a tough position.
So hey guys, you now, if you're watching the video version, you see that it's a little bit different. I'm laying in bed now. Sorry for that abrupt ending with Travis. We were having some connection issues. My power went out, so my Wi-Fi kept cutting, and we couldn't quite figure it out. And then Travis had to run. But hope you enjoyed a pretty insightful, episode with Travis. A good interview with him, I think, in the sense that he's a guy that, young runners especially, but any runner could learn a lot from a science training perspective, but also from a career perspective. And if you don't know who Travis is, and this episode didn't give you a great kind of background on him, he's well worth looking up if you're a fan of the sport. But I figured if you made it this far, I guess you care enough for a little bit of an update as to kind of where I'm at, where this is all at. So just finished up my first year on the pro circuit, racing post-collegiately. I would say it was an average year. It's definitely wasn't a year that I'm content with or happy with or anything like that. A lot of 147s, a lot of competing for wins in races that went out pretty slow. Didn't really find myself in a lot of situations where, we had a hard enough first 400 to run something pretty fast. But, at the end of the day, I've always been a guy that does this because I like racing, not because I care about times. I know the value of times, and, times is how you make money in this sport. But at the end of the day, I'm proud of my racing this year against higher level guys more consistently than my collegiate experience. That being said, I'm really excited for the next year. I think I learned immensely, and we're changing up a few things and heading out to Flagstaff for the fall, which will be my first real stint at altitude. So I'm hoping that could be helpful. And as for all this, I'll be out there with Abel Tefra, so hopefully we can get some good content for you guys. Maybe get him to co-host a few, and no promises on a schedule with episodes. I know you young high school kids that DM me or comment on stuff, bring back Hills and Twos. I'll try to do some more episodes with some guys, but or some women as well, hopefully. Would love to get more women on if anyone's got suggestions. But thanks for listening. Thanks for caring, whether you like it or don't like it one way or the other. I guess you care to some extent. So I guess welcome back to Hills and Twos. Thanks for listening to this episode with Travis Mahoney. And as always, we go onward, try to get better every day. So see ya.